In terms of the controversy around sleep training, if I'm going to be honest, I find the whole thing kind of silly. That's how I see it. I find it very, very silly that we apparently live in a world where it's not possible for parents to make different choices around their kids without allegedly harming them in the process. I don't know why it can't just be, hey, you know what? There is more than one option here to choose. And each of these options is okay. Because the reality is that there is zero evidence, like literally zero, proving any of these allegations around sleep training causing any kind of harm.
Giving birth is one of the most significant events of your life. Sadly, the joy that you should feel can often be replaced with anxiety and helplessness instead. As a labor and delivery nurse, I'm revealing insider information to educate you, reassure you, and decrease your fear. In this podcast, you'll hear empowering birth stories and experts weigh in on a range of topics. Being Jewish also has me exploring Judaism's influence on the reproductive experience. However, I speak to anyone wishing to navigate their journey with more joy and confidence. I'm your host, Chani Fingerer, and you're listening to the Happy Birthway Podcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Happy Birthway Podcast, Eva from My Sleeping Baby.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit of what you do? And we would love to hear some tips about sleeping. This is like the number one thing that parents struggle with after having their first baby, especially after having their first baby, after having every baby, obviously. But I think the exhaustion of having a newborn for the first time is just indescribable. You cannot explain it until you actually go through it. Like I remember as a teenager, as a young adult, like, yeah, I pulled one night, all nighter. So I was like, yeah, you know, having a newborn is not going to be that bad, but oh my gosh, what a surprise it was.
Yeah. Well, so a little bit about myself, in a nutshell, I, got into this business completely by accident. So, I'm a mom of three. My husband and I live in Toronto. We're both born and raised here. And I had graduated from law school. This is now back in 2011, and gave birth to my first baby shortly after writing my last set of finals. And my life plan was to find some sort of public sector role working as a lawyer where I could have, you know, some semblance of work-life balance and just pursue that career. And then I was actually on my way to that. I finished law school, got called to the bar, got a job working as a lawyer. And then I was pregnant with my second baby and went on maternity leave with her. And I guess what's relevant is the fact that I live in Toronto, in Canada, where we have 12 months of maternity leave. I hate saying that out loud on a podcast where many of the listeners are American, because I really don't want to rub this policy in people's faces. It's just that it is relevant to how I became a sleep consultant, because this second baby of mine did not sleep. This older baby, my first, was literally a dream baby that made me look like the best mom in the entire world. And then this baby was legitimately the complete opposite. And a few months into, you know, my 12-month maternity leave, I distinctly remember her waking up every 90 minutes all night long. And I was so tired. I thought I was going to die. I had no clue what to do with myself. And so out of sheer desperation, I started opening up the sleep books, tried to figure out what to do. I made the situation slightly more manageable on my own, which gave me the clarity that I needed to sort of come up with this random idea. Hey, why don't I use up the rest of my maternity leave to get my my certification to become a sleep consultant, not so that I can leave law, because I mean, who does that? That's just crazy. Rather, just to launch sort of a fun side business while still working as a lawyer. And that plan actually ended up working out really well, in that my boss let me come back part-time. I had this part-time side business that ended up growing a lot more quickly than I imagined, because when you think about it, when you help a really exhausted mom get her baby sleeping, take a wild guess what she's going to do. She's going to go and tell every single one of her fellow exhausted mom friends, hey, guess what I did? Guess who I hired, you know, to help me with my baby. And so the business really grew from there. And so, to make a very long story short, I ended up going all in on the business full time, just to sort of see where it goes. And I haven't looked back. And that baby of mine, who is waking me up every 90 minutes all night long, is now 9 and a half. So I've been doing this now full time for a solid 8 and a half years. And I absolutely love it, because I get to help exhausted families get their little ones sleeping like champs in a relatively short period of time, meaning it's not necessarily an overnight success, but it's not the type of process that needs to take weeks and weeks and weeks and months on end either. And so for me, it's just so unbelievably, incredibly rewarding to be able to help families alter their quality of life in a relatively short period of time. And so that is what I do in a nutshell.
Wow, that must be so fulfilling. And isn't it cool how when you become a mother, when someone becomes a mother, they use that so often as a life transformational experience that will apply to many other areas of their life, such as career. I speak to so many people who, when they became moms, they saw a specific niche for a need, and they were able to pivot in whatever career they had to that. Like, I know so many people who were business executives and then became childbirth educators and such. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really cool. I would love for our audience to hear about tips that you have that, you know, can they even start with anything right when their baby's born? And then also surrounding there are controversies around the whole sleep training method. So many different varying opinions. People can get actually really, really fired mm-hmm. up and, passionate about their specific opinions. I'd love for you to speak a little bit, touch a little bit on that. And then, you know, like the breastfeeding, where a baby has to eat frequently when they're newborn, mm-hmm. and how you navigate that.
Yes. Okay. So let me address the second question first, because that's actually the easier one to address than the newborn sleep. Because I do want to delve into how parents can maximize sleep in the newborn stage, despite the fact that your little one is, you know, only a few weeks old. So in terms of the controversy around sleep training, if I'm going to be honest, I find the whole thing kind of silly. That's how I see it. I find it very, very silly that we apparently live in a world where it's not possible for parents to make different choices around their kids without allegedly harming them in the process. I don't know why it can't just be, hey, you know what? There is more than one option here to choose. And each of these options is okay, because the reality is that there is zero evidence, like literally zero, proving any of these allegations around sleep training causing any kind of harm. And so, and in fact, we actually do have really legitimate evidence proving the opposite conclusion, that it is safe, it is effective. And so therefore, my whole feeling on this is that if you want to sleep train, then sleep train. If what you are doing is not working for you and your mental health is suffering as a result, that is a very important factor to be considering here, because your baby needs a happy, healthy, content, well-rested mommy. Like, maternal mental health is very, very important here for your little one and their attachment to you and their overall well-being. And so that is a choice that you have. You don't have to sleep train. If you don't want to, you don't have to. If you have your little one in your bed or you are rocking to sleep and maybe nursing on demand all night long and it's legitimately working for you, cool. Those decisions never worked for me. It's not the route that I went, but that's the route that you can go and your kids will be okay. And my kids are okay. And there is more than one right way to do things here. So I just find the whole thing kind of silly at a surface level. If we were going to actually really dig deeper here, I do find it very toxic because, as I said, for a lot of moms, doing things the other way, you know, the co-sleeping, the rocking to sleep, the nursing on demand is leading to them really, truly suffering and being told, well, if you go that other direction, it's dangerous, it's harmful, you're going to, you know, harm your kid for life. It puts these very vulnerable moms in a really heartbreaking situation where now they think that they don't have a choice but to just suffer through whatever it is, you know, whatever their sleep situation looks like. And that to me is very dangerous. So, but I don't want to delve too much into that because then I can find myself in a really deep rabbit hole where I get extremely fired up. Because when you think about it, and I know that you would agree with me, postpartum moms are a very vulnerable population group. They're very, very vulnerable. And so when you're exposing them to all these opinions, because that's really what they are. They are opinions about that choice as a parenting choice. These many of these moms are parents that who would otherwise not even think about sleep training and then get their sanity back and then get their lives back, but now are questioning that and feel stuck between a rock and a hard place. It's heart-wrenching to me. And I get very protective of this population when I'm hearing all this messaging. So I don't like it on the surface. I think it is silly. I think it's nonsense. I think that it's harming your child is never about just doing one thing. It's not that simple. It's a heck of a lot more complicated than that. And we have more than enough evidence and research to back up the safety and effectiveness of sleep training as a choice, if it's a choice for you. But if it's not a choice for you, don't do it. But if your friend is doing it, your friend's kid is going to be okay. All right. So that's sort of the first thing. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. As I said, I'm trying to not go down a rabbit hole here because this is something that I could really get on my soapbox about.
I just agree with so much of what you said. And it's interesting because, you know, in today's day and age with all the social media and everything, I think that people are exposed to a much wider range of opinions and options and information that they didn't necessarily know. And like you said, just these are all opinions of how to go about the right way. And every family is going to have, they're going to have different needs. But I think that, like you said, also, especially new moms are so vulnerable to, they just want to do the best that they can for their child. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to go to all lengths to do that and sacrifice so much. And they don't necessarily have to do that. They're not necessarily going to be harming their child. No. And I hear from so many people of the past generations, you know, those that are like pretty much finished raising their kids, whose kids are maybe teens, maybe already in their 20s, the youngest kids, say, when I was raising my kids, like, it was no big deal. We just did whatever was good for us. Like, we didn't face all this judgment. We didn't think so deeply into it. We didn't have all this anxiety that parents have today. So it's very eye-opening to me. And I think that our generation in particular has this added challenge in our parenting, because we're exposed to so many different things and people can start young stigma. You know, you go to these mommy Facebook groups and somebody writes something, they're like, oh, that's evil. That's horrible.
Yes. And suddenly we're exposed to so many more random people's opinions that we would otherwise never be exposed to without social media. I mean, if I didn't have social media, the number of people that I would interact with per day would be like, I'd be able to count on one hand, maybe two. You know what I mean? Like the number of opinions that I'd be exposed to is a fraction of what I am exposed to now. And so I think that, you know, a survival skill set that moms need to have nowadays is developing that filter. You know, if you are on social media and you're not tossing away your smartphone and you're not deleting your Instagram app and you want to stay on these apps because there is still so much value that you get from them, that's great. You know, stick around, but having that filter to be able to remind yourself, okay, this is just someone's opinion. They are allowed to have their opinion, but it doesn't mean that their opinion is correct. It doesn't mean that their opinion is based on clinical evidence of any kind. It's just that. I think that having that ability is going to make it a lot easier for you to filter through all the noise out there and just do what moms did 20 years ago before they had social media, which is figure out what works best for you and do it and move on from there and not even think twice about it.
Yeah, totally. And it helped me when I was, I mean, there were virtually no sleeping coaches as far as I knew back when I had my daughter 16 years ago. And what really helped me also was just running these things by my pediatrician who I trusted and him giving me his blessing. And that just really sealed the deal for me with whatever I did. But I did the crying it out when my kids were 6 months old. And again, I hope nobody judges. I don't really care if anybody does because it worked well for me. And I think they're pretty adjusted yeah. at this point in their lives. But, you know, I would love to hear what your take on this is. And yeah, like you said, just surround yourself in your circles and on social media, it applies to the same thing. And on listening to podcasts and on books, just surround yourself with what vibes with your lifestyle and what you're leaning toward. And so all the parents that are against sleep training here, then you can shut this off right now. But yeah. I want to hear all the deets. So let us know.
100%. Or if you are against it, or it's not a decision that you yourself made because it never felt right to you. As someone who did sleep train and who does help other moms sleep train, I support you and your decision to not sleep train your kids. As I said, there is more than one right way to do things. And the most important factor here is figuring out what works for you. At the same time, I think it is very important for those moms who do choose to sleep train, especially if they are in your friendship circle, your family circles and whatnot, to not have to hear, you know, not have to hear thoughts on the matter that are not supportive, because really it goes both ways. And as I said, there's more than one right way to raise a happy, healthy, emotionally stable child. And it's never a matter of just making one decision that you don't agree with that is suddenly going to be enough to harm a child, because that's just not how this works. It's so much more complicated than that. I've interviewed numerous specialists on my podcast talking about the science of attachment and sleep training and raising happy, healthy, emotionally stable children in so much more detail. And it's so much simpler than just writing a you know, cute sounding caption on Instagram, an eye-catching caption on Instagram. It's so, so, so much more than that. So in a nutshell, I think everyone, you can just like breathe a sigh of relief. The kids are going to be okay. As long as you are otherwise, you know, a good mom, you are responding to your kids, you love them, you care about them, you're, you know, meeting their needs, they know that you love them and care about them. You know, like they know that they can count on you. Like your kids will be okay whether or not you choose to sleep train or not. So just do what you need to do, do what feels right, and then move on from there. But this, obviously, it goes without saying, is not something that applies to babies who are newborn. So we are not sleep training newborn babies. You know, babies in that 0 to 3 month range, you know, ballpark, are obviously not old enough to be learning how to sleep, you know, completely independently just yet. But there is still a lot that parents can do to maximize sleep in the newborn stage and get their little ones off on the right foot from the very beginning. So that's something that I guess we can delve into a little bit more, and it's probably going to feel a little bit more neutral than the discussion about sleep training.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I figure that starting with good habits, even from day zero, would help contribute to an easier experience past 3 months when babies are ready to go for longer stretches.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that there is this myth that basically says when you have a newborn, life is going to be a bit of a gong show, and that there is absolutely nothing that you can do about it, and that all you have to do is just count down the days and wait it out until your little one is old enough to sleep train, or if you choose to not sleep train, just sort of magically decides on their own that they're ready to give you longer stretches. When the reality is that that's actually very far from the truth. There really is a lot of meaningful steps that you can intentionally take when your little one is a newborn to get them off on the right foot. So, you know, first and foremost, I mean, let's talk about those first, let's say 2 to 3 weeks when your little one is like brand new, fresh out of the womb. This is that stage where you might not be able to, where your little one is barely awake, right? Where it's very, very common for babies to be up for very short periods of time. If you are attempting to breastfeed, that may take up the vast majority of the time that they're awake during the day, and that is okay. That being said, the most common sleep challenge that I see that moms have with their newborns is what's known as day-night confusion, where they are born into the world and have no idea when it's daytime and when it's night. And then the end result is that they are literally sleeping all day long, eating, and then going right back to sleep all day. And then at night, that's when their eyes are just wide awake and they just want to party. And that is, unfortunately, very common because babies are not born with a biological clock the way that you and I have. It will form with time, and there are things that we can do to sort of expedite that process, to encourage their biological clock to begin to understand when it's daytime and when it's nighttime. So a couple tips that I would give you if this is something that you are going through is, first and foremost, during those first few weeks of life, make sure that they are exposed to lots of natural or artificial light during daytime hours. So when your little one is older, I am a huge proponent of them napping during the day in a very dark room so that it's easier for them to fall asleep and stay asleep. This is not applicable to the first few weeks when we want your little ones' circadian rhythm, that's what it's known as, to be really begin to develop. And so the best way to help that biological clock of your little one develop as quickly as possible is to use light as your most powerful tool to help their bodies understand, this is daytime. So when it is time for them to go to sleep for that, you know, let's say 10-hour period, sure, they might be waking up a whole bunch in between, but when they are waking up and eating in the middle of the night, you really don't want to be turning on your bedroom light or flicking on a lamp. Sure, you're going to need some light, especially if you're just figuring out how to breastfeed. I'll speak from experience, even when my babies were breastfeeding just fine, I still needed, you know, a bit of a light. So to just get that initial latch started. And so having maybe a dim hallway light on is going to be enough for you to be able to do your thing. But at the same time, keep your bedroom really, really dark so that your little one learns that 3 a.m. is the middle of the night and that it's not smack in the middle of the day. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing that I would tell you to be very, very mindful of is how long your little one naps during daytime hours. So this is something that I discovered completely on my own with my first baby. This is me. This is law school graduate Eva. I was not in the, that baby of mine is almost 12 now. This is not something that I had read about at all. I wasn't reading anything when I was pregnant other than my law school textbooks. So I really came to like the world of motherhood knowing next to nothing. That being said, I saw very early on that she would give me 1 4-hour stretch in a 24-hour period. Literally like from the 2-week mark, that was when I started to notice this. And that's when I remember telling my husband, don't let Amuna sleep more than 2 to 3 hours because I want that 4-hour stretch at nighttime, not during the day. And what ended up happening was that 4-hour stretch over time lengthened, became 5 hours, 6 hours, 7 hours. And so, and then that was her nighttime stretch. And since then, I have noticed that that is something that many, many babies will do, is that they'll give us like one longer stretch every 24-hour period. Don't let that longer stretch be during the day. It might be amazing to have a 4-hour period of time to, you know, rest and hang out and maybe get other things done. I'm telling you, now is not the time to be productive during the day. Now is the time to be a little bit more hands-on or a lot more hands-on with your baby during the day, and then get that 4-hour stretch for yourself at night. It is worth its weight in gold. It will pay off in dividends. And from there, that getting that stretch happening during the nighttime is going to also allow your little one's biological clock to adjust to daytime and nighttime a lot more quickly than I have seen. So those are my two really, really big tips with regards to those first few weeks and specifically day-night confusion, which I find is the one of the biggest sleep problems.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, I love that. And I want to mention through, you know, some information that I have through my work as a labor and delivery and postpartum nurse. So for parents who are breastfeeding, those who are bottle feeding exclusively with formula, then babies can typically go for longer stretches and they tend to fall more into a schedule. But for moms who are breastfeeding, in the hospital that I work in particular, we're very careful about telling them to wake up their baby every 3 hours to feed if the baby hasn't woken up, and then to feed on demand otherwise. But I tell my parents, you know, after you go home, once your baby's weight is caught up to their weight, they're gaining nicely, your pediatrician gives you the blessing, babies will typically nurse 8 to 12 times per day. And I think that's really important to differentiate between nursing them every 2 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you'll have babies that'll nurse, you know, every hour, every 2 hours, and then they'll give you that longer stretch. So like you said, you want to have that longer stretch at night, and that entails waking up your baby during the day.
Yeah.
If a certain length of time has gone by that they have not eaten. And like you said, it's tempting not to do that and to get a bunch of stuff done. And people feel really bad actually waking up their sleeping newborn. That's like a thing I hear
for
so
sure.
Frequently.
Cause they'll hear this saying, never wake a sleeping baby. And I would love to, you know, edit. I should really honestly make this an Instagram post where, you know, it says, never wake a sleeping baby, and then add it in at the bottom. Unless you have to wake your sleeping baby. And here is a list of reasons why waking your sleeping baby is actually the right thing to do. Sure, to begin with, we don't just wake sleeping babies for the fun of it, you know, because for no reason. Sure, okay, fine. I can agree with that in theory. But this is a perfect example of one of those exceptions, which is you want that stretch happening at night. You don't want it happening during the day. If you are breastfeeding, you want your body to get used to producing more during the day so that that your baby can get used to eating the majority of their calories during daytime hours so that they're then on the right path to be able to give you longer stretches at night because they ate really well during the day. And with if they're giving you these big, massive stretches during the day, take a wild guess what your night is going to look like. Your little one's going to need to catch up on those calories. And then you're going to end up paying the price for that in the sleep department. And that is not fun. So never wake a sleeping baby unless you need to wake a sleeping baby. And then if you need to wake a sleeping baby, do so guilt-free.
Right, exactly. And the challenge though is I just have to throw in there from a breastfeeding lactation point of view, your body's milk production is highest at night and early morning hours. And mm-hmm. so it gets challenging because babies do want to feed all night because that's when your milk production is at its highest. So, you know, there are just different things to consider and one has to see a lactation consultant in addition, especially if your baby's having difficulty gaining weight, etc. But like you said, feeding during the day, the more they're fed during the day, the more full they'll feel. And also I find evening hours is when your milk production dips. Again, it's a normal mm-hmm. physiological body thing that it does with lactation. And so I found also that like the cluster feeding and just frequently prodding your baby to feed during the evening hours before it actually hits nighttime mm-hmm. is also beneficial where they may want to feed, or you can even prompt them and encourage them to feed a lot during those evening hours, even more frequently right. than the 2-hour mark.
Yeah. 100% where you can, you know, encourage or allow your baby to cluster feed in those early evening hours so that they can give you, you know, that initial stretch in the first part of the night, because, you know, you're right. An ideal time, you know, when milk supply is really good, from what I've heard, I'm not a lactation consultant, but I've had numerous of them on my podcast, is that like 3 to 6 AM time frame. So that's where I'm going, okay, cool. Let your little one go from, if they can go from, let's say 10 PM until 3 AM, then that allows you to really have your cake and eat it too, in that they're nursing throughout the day, cluster feeding in the evening, giving you a 5-hour stretch off the bat. And then they get to eat in that 3 to 4 a.m. time frame, which, as you said, is really good for milk supply. Baby can get in a really good feed at that point. And then from there, the reason why I feel so passionate about this is because we have a lot of clinical data that proves that when a postpartum mom is able to get a 5-hour stretch of sleep off the bat, her rate of postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, the chances of her developing those goes down dramatically, dramatically when you get that 5-hour stretch. And while it might not be able to happen at first, we definitely want to see for the sake of the mom's mental health, we definitely want to be doing all that we can to encourage that stretch off the bat so that mom can wake up and feel semi-human the next day. Versus when that stretch doesn't happen, that's when the mom can really begin to struggle and suffer mentally. And the reality is that getting that 5-hour stretch early on does not need to sacrifice breastfeeding if there is enough breastfeeding happening in the rest of that 24-hour period. So that's one of the reasons why I think that it's just such a game-changing insight to be aware of, because the effects that it can have on mom's mental health short-term and in the long run are enormous.
Totally, totally. Oh my gosh, sleep deprivation is like the number one trigger for having emotional dysregulation. So yes, we're coming to a close soon. I wanted to ask you if you had anything important you'd like the audience to know before you end off. And then also if you can let us know where people can reach you, the deets about your Instagram account and your podcast and any other area.
Yeah, absolutely. So one other, I would say, very important tip that I have for parents of little ones in the newborn stage is to avoid letting your little one become overtired. What does that mean? When your little one is up for periods of time that are too long, it is going to cause them to fight sleep more. Ironically, people think, oh, if my little one is more tired, then he'll just fall asleep more easily. It's actually the opposite, where when your little one is up for too long, they end up fighting sleep. They end up not napping well. They end up not sleeping well at night. They end up feeling very restless and unsettled as a result of being overtired. And so ensuring that your newborn is napping very frequently throughout the day, including those early evening hours, is really, really crucial. Now, the main factor that you want to be using to figure out when your little one needs to go back to sleep is what's called a wake window or a wake period. And that refers to how long your little one can be up for. Newborn wake windows are very, very short. They're usually somewhere in the 45 to maybe 75 minute range. I've seen some 3 month olds be able to do 90 minutes, but that is still a relatively very short period of time. And this is something that benefits sleep as a whole so hugely, because as I said, first of all, it means your little one's not going to be unsettled. It also means that they'll be able to eat better during the day because they're not going to be tired and hungry at the exact same time. It was, I think, one of the reasons why I was able to get my exclusively breastfed then 6 week old sleeping 8 hour stretches, because he wasn't overtired. He was eating well during the day. I was also teaching him to begin to fall asleep a little bit more on his own, so that by that point I was getting consistent 8 hour stretches without any end in sight consistently in the long run. So if you want to learn more about how you can get that happening for your little one, or maybe you already have an older baby who is ready to either be sleeping through the night or almost be sleeping through the night, you can check out my website, mysleepingbaby.com, where I have a podcast, a blog, and tons of free resources. I specifically have a free masterclass that you can watch, geared towards moms of little ones ages 4 months to 5 years. So I'll send you over that link. And I have a newborn sleep coaching course that you can purchase that was inspired by that baby of mine who began giving me, that exclusively breastfed baby of mine who was giving me 8 hour stretches. Because turns out that there are lots of moms out there that want to learn how their little ones can do the same. So feel free to reach out and I can definitely help you from there.
Thank you so much, Eva. Thank you for the work you do. And I think of all of the areas of the perinatal phases and the newborn phase, I think sleep training coaches are like, give the most, I think most instantly gratifying results in terms of it takes work, but it's like, this is such a huge, huge problem I think that many parents face. And it's just, there's so many practical solutions that can really make a difference. So thanks again, Eva. Thanks for joining us and for all that good info.
Thank you so much for having me, honey. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning into the Happy Birthway podcast. Head over to Yoledit Academy on Instagram to continue the conversation. You'll find the link in the episode show notes, as well as links to any additional resources, products, and services mentioned here. If you love listening to this show, you can help it grow by sharing it with your friends and rating and reviewing it. To stay in the loop when new episodes are released, make sure to subscribe. Remember that your health needs are unique and require individualized medical advice. The podcast is not a replacement, and some of the information may not be appropriate for your specific circumstances. My mission is to educate you so that you can confidently collaborate with your healthcare team. I believe that a healthy mom and healthy baby are simply not enough. We also need a happy mom with an empowering birth experience.